I mean, would it not be cool if everybody basically had a formula?
No, it would not be cool if there was an ISO standard for thoughtfulness that I have to meet up with.
That scares me.
That would not be cool. Friends and enemies, welcome to Bad Voltage Season 3, Episode 37. My name is Stuart Langridge, and I'm here with Jeremy Garcia and Jono. I didn't think of a name. I know. I even thought...
You bollock him every time for not thinking of a name, and then every you went ahead and didn't think of a name.
I know, and I even thought to myself, I'll do it about Jono, as like a nice like tables are turned thing. And then then I forgot to call him Jono Ursula Bacon, so it's just all gone wrong.
Ursula.
I don't know where that came from.
Isn't that like a bad woman in a Disney movie or something like that? Anyway.
Yeah, actually, yes.
Based on that amazing start to the show, what are we going to talk about?
So, we're going to talk about Facebook, because there's been quite a lot of Facebook stuff happening recently. Now, importantly, this is not about the recent outage that happened a few days before this show, mostly because if that's proved anything, it's that basically everyone on Twitter is already an expert on BGP and doesn't need our help explaining it. So instead, what I wanted to talk about was the whistleblower, or more accurately, the more than one whistleblower. But most recently, Francis Haugen, who is, I'm not sure, is that how it's pronounced? I'm not actually sure. I've heard a bunch of different pronunciations.
I think so. I watched the 60 Minutes interview, and I think that's how it's pronounced.
Yes, that was my thought, but yes. So she has accused Facebook of putting profit ahead of safety, of using Instagram to essentially tacitly encourage young girls to do health-damaging things, or more accurately, to not put enough effort in to stop this sort of thing happening. And so this whole conversation has blown up. Now, this conversation is something that we've talked about a little bit before, and people have touched on before, and we've seen quite a lot of appetite in government for some kind of regulation of big tech. And at the same time, we've seen quite a lot of appetite for advisors to government to remember that tech is more than just Facebook and to stop coming up with things which regulate Facebook and, as a sort of unintended side effect, entirely flatten the rest of the internet. But we'll leave all that to one side. There's a couple of questions that I think it would be interesting for us to investigate. The first one is Francis Haugen and Facebook themselves have said that they have reduced hate speech on their platform and division and things in this area by a reasonable degree. Haugen then goes on to say they could do a lot more, but they choose not to do so. Okay, we basically, I think, all believe that to be the truth.
Yes, yes. Uncontroversial opinion.
Yes. So, obviously, Facebook themselves, assume Haugen is correct, obviously Facebook themselves could elect to do better. They could try harder than they're doing. They don't seem to want to. Whatever their reasons are, leave those to one side. What can be done to make them do so? You know, you can't have some government department in the business of micromanaging what Facebook tell their programmers to do. That's ridiculous. So what can be done? And then the second question is, assume Facebook genuinely did want to fix these problems that hate speech causes on their platform and for the world. What can they do? Is there anything that they can do more than they are currently doing? When they say we're doing the best we can and look at the results we've had, do we think they're telling the truth? And if we don't think they're telling the truth, what should they be doing and are not? Those are the questions I think it would be interesting to address, and I'd be interested in your thoughts on them.
There's a lot to unpack there.
There is.
So you said quite that you dismissed, it seemed to me, regulation out of hand. Was that a misinterpretation of how you worded that, or?
That's a, if I worded it that way, that wasn't correct. I'm not dismissing regulation. My point is, I'm interested in what that regulation should say. Because that regulation is presumably not going to say the government get to appoint all Facebook's middle managers. Sure. But equally, you can't have regulation which says you must do better, Facebook, or you will be punished, because it's not school.
Otherwise, it's just a down with this sort of thing sign at that point.
The regulation just says be better. That's not enough, it turns out.
And importantly, down with that sort of thing sides are meant to be directed against the government. The government themselves aren't allowed to hold them up about other people. That's not how it works.
The one thing that fascinated me is one of the proposed solutions that is being debated here. And another fascinating thing, as the one American on the panel here, is this seems to be the first thing that both sides of Congress have agreed on since a very long, I can't even remember when. So it's that
Dred Scott. It's,
then it of itself is interesting. But one of the things they called for was, quote, a new agency of digital experts that has the agility to deal with the ever-evolving digital market. And this is a pretty optimistic idea. And the way they defined this was the agency would bring tech industry leaders into dialogue with federal representatives, quote unquote, ideally digital natives, to determine an agreed-upon set of behavioral standards later codified and enforced by the agency through monitoring, monetary penalties, and disgorgement. Unlike existing agencies, this new agency, created from scratch, would allow the implementation of modern management practices and policies capable of keeping pace with a fast-moving industry. So, It reminds me
of, do you remember when Trump first got in and there was that meeting where all the tech execs sat around that big table?
Yeah.
All awkwardly kind of staring at each other. That sounds like that.
That was so many words to say, not a lot. But I don't know how you spin up a new federal agency that is suddenly nimble, unlike the rest of the agencies. So,
no. And government is not good at this sort of thing. I mean, we talked last show, when I explicitly said I went to talk to the regulator on a different topic, but nonetheless. And so I'm obviously in favor of this kind of regulation and assisting with these kind of agencies. And even so, you can't expect a government agency to be on top of the tech industry. That's just not how it works.
One interesting thing here that's only maybe tangentially related is I've come to the thought recently, and this is very new for me, that governments actually shouldn't be all that nimble, because that makes them capricious. And if there's one thing you don't want your government to be, is capricious. So them being a little bit slow to react and things taking the bureaucracy, actually, I think, and like I said, I'm still mentally going through this with myself a little bit, but I think it's actually a good thing, because it prevents wild swinging changes that just keep oscillating with the moment. So I don't know that we even want this, even if it was ideally implemented. But
it's an argument I've heard before, at least partially because it's part of the sort of underlying unspoken reason for the House of Lords being the upper chamber here in the UK, that they're meant to provide a sort of stuck in the mud, not changing very fast, to adopt new ideas basis for government. And when you're hoping that they will move, or when you're hoping that the American government will move faster, it can be very frustrating. But yeah, it's not a wholly bad thing.
It strikes me that, you know, we've talked in the past about, I think it might have been on the last show as well, where we were talking about competing in entrenched markets. Like when we were talking about, you know, Apple and Google have basically ruled the roost in the app stores. You know, one argument to changing these kinds of things is that the market decides that the market wants something else. That's clearly not going to happen with Facebook. It's too big of a beast. Yep. So therefore, to me, there's two other things that will impact their policy and decision making. Either they're regulated, or somehow it impacts the financials. And the financials is thoroughly in their domain right now. I don't think they're going to start making any less money anytime soon. So unfortunately, I think regulation is kind of the only real option that's on the table in terms of making meaningful changes. The problem is, I agree with both of you guys, like, governments are generally not very good at this. They're often kind of slow moving. And the problem with this is that, like Ak said right at the beginning of this, how do you define what we actually want them to do?
This is exactly my point. I mean, there are a lot of conversations which a lot of people, including us, have had over the last somewhere in between 1 and 10 years, saying Facebook should be regulated. But no one seems to go on to say what that regulation should say beyond down with this sort of thing, which, as you say, we can't do. So,
right. And I think, to me, part of the problem with a lot of the way that regulation actually ends up being implemented will in the end help Facebook, not hurt them, because they have the resources to do a whole bunch of regulatory things that a upstart will not have, and it will prevent competition.
Yes. And yeah, this is exactly kind of the point that I was making about advisors to government. So if you look at Heather Burns in the Open Rights Group here in the UK, they've made a very strong play that if you are the government and you're looking to regulate tech, you're not allowed to think the words Facebook, because if you make laws which are basically about Facebook, exactly as you say, Facebook go, oh, we have to do all this stuff? Okay, let's just pay 10,000 people to do it.
Right. Their department for that regulation will be larger than the startups they're competing with.
Yes, the amount that department spends on Post-its will be larger than the startups they're competing with.
So I guess then on one side you have, should Facebook be broken up? Because that would be one form of regulation. And the other one would be, if you were to not break them up, but were to regulate a different way, what would that regulation look like?
Okay, so I have a little short story, which is not entirely right, I don't think, and I'm not 100% sure about it, but
other than that, it's going to be great.
You're really selling it. I have a short story that's it's incorrect, but it's short, so don't worry.
I appreciate that I'm reaching a bit here, but that's because I've spent a week thinking about this, and I still don't have a very good handle on what I think should happen, but this is the kernel of an idea. So there's a guy called Lewis Barclay, and he wrote a browser extension called Unfollow Everything. Okay. So Facebook allow you to individually go in and unfollow friends or groups or pages or whatever to remove stuff from the newsfeed.
Yes.
And so Lewis Barclay wrote a tool which unfollows everything and lets you build it all up from scratch. And Facebook, like, insta-banned this guy. And they talked a big game about how now the thing you've done is you've created software which automates user interactions with Facebook, and that's not allowed. But I am 100% convinced that the reason they came down really hard on this is because they don't want you to do that. And it made me start thinking in terms of, if Facebook were required to allow third parties to interact with them, not just by being able to just ban a whole bunch of interactions as we don't like that. So you innate, this is a very kind of open source nerd way of thinking about a problem and solving a social problem through technological means, which I rampantly disagree with. But some sort of effort to mandate, you know, not quite a standardized Facebook API, but requiring.
What you really want is an open graph.
Yeah. Which you have, but at the moment it's very much Facebook provides and you consume. If you allow people to improve Facebook in ways that Facebook doesn't like, but the consumers do like, then does that help? I mean, this is part of what John is saying about the market. At the moment, the market can't compete. And it's not just the market can't compete with Facebook, but the market can't compete to improve Facebook. It's very much Facebook is the way the Facebook team want it, and you don't get a look in.
Well, and it's different as well on that, just quickly on that specific note, it's different to a traditional product, right?
Yes.
Like, for example, if you got a Peloton and a Nordic Track, I think they're another company that makes bikes, right? The market will decide if Peloton becomes too expensive and they're not good and they stop being decent, the market will move elsewhere. But it's different with something like a social media network because the product, as everybody says, the product is you, right? And it's your information, it's your connections. So it's very difficult to move away from Facebook. And the only people who ever do that do it usually for ideological means.
Yes.
Like they disagree with Facebook and that's why they leave. So, yeah, it's very difficult to shift that.
As I say, I'm short of ways to articulate this, and I've been trying to think of ways to articulate it. But I think if something like that unfollow everything tool were allowed, so people could take it upon themselves to clean up their Facebook experience or to alter it or to change it in ways that Facebook don't like because it's basically against Facebook's business model to make it easy for you to declare bankruptcy. So I've talked before on the show about how the youth of today find it the youth of 5 years ago, it might have changed again, right? Have a very different attitude to us old people about things like email bankruptcy and phone number bankruptcy, where every 2 or 3 years you just like get a new phone number, get a new email address, and just tell the people that you want the new one. And the old one's just a black hole. You just never look at it anymore. And it's a very good way of making sure that you don't have this legacy list of people over your phone number. Now, to me, this is horrific, and I can't believe anyone does it. But if you adopt this as a policy, it's actually not a bad idea, because you don't have all these people from 10 and 15 years ago that you don't want to go through and clean up and everything. And being able to declare Facebook newsfeed bankruptcy every couple of years, to me, seems like a jolly good way of making sure that it's not full of stuff that you're not really interested in, but feel a bit uncomfortable about getting rid of. And as I say, I'm reaching for an idea that I can't quite articulate here, but do you get the kind of thing I'm aiming at?
So you want the most badgery product person at Facebook to be Congress, basically?
I might want that. Yeah, that's not. I wish you hadn't put it that way. But yes. But yeah.
But it seems like the main issue that the whistleblower was saying. What was the name again? I forget.
Horgan. Francis Horgan. Francis Horgan.
We'll say Francis. The main set thing that Francis wanted, was zoning in on here, right? Was one. Something we've all known for a while now, which is controversial content solicits engagement, right? Clicks, responses, comments, things like that. And the second is that the more cesspooly parts of Facebook, that Facebook aren't doing enough about it. And then that's resulting in, for example, these issues with body image with young girls on Instagram and things like that. So it seems like the root cause of all of this is getting rid of that shit off of Facebook. Now, we said before we started recording this show, we don't want to get into a debate about what free speech is, because it's too big of a question and we won't get anywhere. Right? But I think what is an interesting question is, even if there was some articulation of what that is that something that Facebook can even do, right? Because we all agree with Francis Horgan's, am I saying it right? Kind of claims, right? We all agree that those are bad things. But even if Facebook just decided they wanted to do that, is it even possible? Like, I mean, it seems to like you can get rid of obvious stuff, like let's say Nazi related material. You decide you're going to get rid of that, and I'm sure there's going to be keyword analysis and this kind of stuff. But I just don't know if it's possible for social media platforms to remove this kind of I just don't know if it's technically feasible.
So I don't think it's about, at least from my perspective, removing the content completely. For all definitions of the content, like the most egregious stuff should immediately be removed, yes, but there's always going to,
of course,
where the line is will always be argued. And I don't think exactly where it is really even that germane to the discussion. I think with Facebook specifically, but other social networks as well, the fact that they have let the algorithm take over, and it's clear the most caustic posts are the most popular, which drive the next more caustic post, which is more popular. And that's become their platform. And it's not only become their platform, it's become their ideology, right? It's become engagement is the metric.
Yes.
And that's the only metric we care about. And by only caring about engagement, they have created a toxic place. Paradoxically, I think that increasingly people don't want to be. When you say Facebook will keep making as much money as they are, I don't think that's true. I think I've personally seen a sea change of people think differently about Facebook in a way that they are just leaving now. Like, I know
they do.
Yes.
They do. People have been saying this for years. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. People are still on Facebook.
Yeah.
The thing is, they just put up with it.
Old people.
No. Loads of people are on Facebook. And there's a reason why it's this.
Yeah. And importantly, yes, even if we spot you that it's just old people who are on Facebook, people who are not as old are on Instagram, which is also Facebook.
So that's a separate. Yeah. So if you're talking just Facebook,
it's all the same thing. Facebook, the platform, is also WhatsApp and is also Instagram.
From a regulatory perspective, the one regulation that would have made sense is not allowing the Instagram acquisition to go through. That should not have closed, realistically.
Yeah.
Right.
So that would be one regulation that makes sense. But I think to your reeling it back to, is it possible? Yes. I think a more chronological news feed coupled with not just caring about engagement, but actually caring about, I mean, humanity sounds like a little bit too much, but caring about something more than just a single metric and having every decision made by that metric, I think would demonstrably improve the platform. It would never be perfect, but it would be better and probably better enough.
I don't know how you get them to do that is the thing. Because if you say, okay, Facebook, there is now a law which says you have to care about more than engagement, that's obviously not going to work.
So you're asking a different question now. The question was, if they decided to, was it possible? I am contending right. The answer to that is yes.
Okay, now that's fair comment, yeah. So if Facebook decided they wanted to fix this, the way they should fix this is to optimize for something other than engagement. What should that thing be?
Well, I was thinking about this because I'm not sure if you guys have seen this. I think this was on Twitter. I saw a tweet on when was it? Like a week ago, something like that.
Notorious social network, Twitter.
Right. Yeah, and I'd already read the piece. Like I'd already read that. It popped up in my Google News feed, and I went to retweet it, and a little message popped up saying, "Do you still want to do this?" Given that you haven't read the piece. And I was thinking, that's a really cool little feature right there. Because all too often people just, oh, I agree with that, hit retweet, right?
Yes, based on the headline. They're doing a bunch of little nudgy stuff, which is either a good idea because they're doing something or not a good idea because they're not tackling actual problems, but whatever.
So to make a comparison, do you remember years and years ago when discussion forums were new? You'd have these little things where, like, when you've posted 500 times, you get a little badge. When you've posted 1,000 times, you get a little badge. And they instantly got gamed in every single community, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about what Discourse does with their trust levels is, you know, Discourse trust level 2 is you've got to read a certain amount. You've got to post a certain amount. You've got to like, you've got to have some things like you fill in your profile. There's no flags. It's an amalgamation of activity. And it's more representative of good contributions. I wonder whether it not being bluntly to your point, Jeremy, about, you know, reactions and comments, which is pure engagement, whether if Facebook were to somehow have a set of other metrics, such as do you read material and what is the level of, you know, clearly offensive material that in the history of your participation. To me, the success criteria here is, can you have a reasonable debate with radically different viewpoints on Facebook and that manifest in the news feed, right? And have somebody just thrown up an unwanted political opinion and everyone goes into the bun fight and have that not manifest in the news feed. That to me is the success criteria because one is a meaningful conversation.
Well, and I think Twitter, if you look at this like 6 months ago, they changed their algorithm to if you keep retweeting things, it will say, we notice you haven't read any of these retweets. Are you sure you want to retweet this? And it adds that friction because they don't just want to have mindless things go viral. And I think that's what's so nefarious sometimes about the way that the Facebook feed algorithm works is it makes it seem like, well, of course everyone agrees with me, you know, except for my idiot uncle, who I eventually have to unfriend, because all you see is a seemingly random series of posts that enforce your viewpoints exactly, but they're not random.
Yes.
No.
Because they totally are because right. they are algorithmically chosen to make you think everyone believes this thing. Yes.
Which we understand, but I don't know that most people I don't think understand that their newsfeed is really curated by an algorithm, not by a human, curated series of things, not just everyone posting stuff.
Well, so here is the thing. One of the things that I considered as a suggestion for this, when Gamergate was going on, Randy Harper built a thing called GG Autoblocker, which picked five leaders of the Gamergate hate mob conspiracy. And it basically made it easy to – it blocked anyone who followed more than two of them. So you could run this thing. And this is, again, like the kind of third-party tool to help you curate. This was for Twitter, not for Facebook. But this is the third-party tool to help you curate your Twitter experience, even though Twitter didn't want you to be able to do this. And that plays into the sort of thing I was talking about earlier, about third-party tools to help you with the Facebook experience. But part of the reason I didn't suggest it is because Jono, and maybe I'm being unfair here, but I thought you would say that's a tool for creating echo chambers and that's not a good idea. And you would have a bit of a point in that, but equally, what Jeremy's just said and we both agree with is that Facebook deliberately creates echo chambers for you. They're algorithmically doing it regardless.
Yeah, the challenge with Randy's tool, which I think is a really cool tool, and it was necessary certainly when she wrote that. The challenge with that in my mind is I think there's a lot of people out there, and I'm one of these people, who follows people who I rabidly disagree with because I want to see both sides of the argument. Now, I don't agree with them. I'm not going to interact with them, and I'm not going to post about their stuff, but I want to see it. And I'm not talking about like horrible shit on the internet. I'm not talking about like Stormfront and places like that. I'm talking about like interesting personalities. My worry about when you have that specific way of doing it is that I think it will generate an echo chamber. But I think what we're zoning in on here is what I think will be really cool for Facebook to do is to look at the measure of the person who's engaging as opposed to just engagement, right? So if you've got somebody who is a thoughtful contributor to a conversation, right? They
That's not a metric, though. Not on Facebook. Not on Facebook scale.
I think it could be. Like, Jeremy gave the example of the idiot uncle. We've all got someone like this in our families, right? The lunatic who just takes the bile that they receive and just amplifies it, and they don't really add anything. Or if they do add anything, it's completely uninformed bullshit, right? Those people don't add anything to any conversation on either side of the fence.
I 100% agree with you. I just can't write a Python script to identify them.
And I would guess, and I don't know. So just to be clear to listeners, the idiot uncle that I mentioned was the abstract. Not, I'm not thinking of anyone specific there. But
in case you're... Jeremy's actual uncle may listen to the show.
I would have thought, and maybe I'm just being too naive or optimistic here, which would be rare but possible. Most people that are caustic in one sphere are probably genuinely driving reasonable conversations in different spheres. So then do you only not allow them to contribute to those posts algorithmically? And how do you figure – or do you think some people are just want to see the world burn?
I would like to see a citation for that, because the stuff that I have read on this suggests that no one is a single issue bigot. An awful lot of people who are bigoted in one sphere are also bigoted in a whole bunch of others as well. And it's one of the indicating things about them.
So I would – on that – yes.
In the extreme,
so
I'd agree with you.
I would agree with that, yes.
There are extremes, but the extremes, I would argue that Facebook's probably their current, whatever they got in place to get rid of the nasty shit on Facebook, will probably apply to the people who are going to be bigots in multiple different areas.
So, Jono, the thing I was trying to get across is, when you were saying people who just amplify stuff and don't contribute to the conversation, that is something you can tell algorithmically. But you use the word thoughtful. And I don't see how a computer program can tell whether you're making a thoughtful contribution rather than just a long contribution.
Right.
It feels like any metric you come up with is, first of all, gameable. And secondly, the people who are in the business of creating division on social media platforms have proved themselves to be a lot better at gaming algorithms than algorithm people are at stopping themselves being gamed.
The reason why people are able to game the algorithms is because the algorithms are stupid, right? I'll give you an example. One of the things I have seen consistently in the marketing world that people say, and I don't think there's anything especially wrong with this, is that if you do Facebook live streams, right, your live stream won't be recommended based upon how many viewers you get. It's how much people interact with it, right? So that's one of the reasons why people who do Facebook live streams will always ask you where you're connecting from and try to get people typing in, because then you're gaming the algorithm to recommend your live stream, your future live streams to more people. But the reason why that works is because we know what the one metric is. It's typing stuff into the comment box. Take, for example, the discourse example, trust levels. In that, and that's a relatively simple thing, they're measuring like five different things, right? So if you want to game that system, you need to know the recipe for all of those five different things. Facebook, apparently, from what I've heard, for each individual account on Facebook, are able to track up to 10,000 data points, right? So I think that Facebook could arguably come up with some amalgamation, it won't be perfect at first, where they measure all of these different elements and they're able to come to some reasonable degree of thoughtfulness, right? Assuming, again, as we said at the beginning of this little game, that they want to do it.
I think a reasonable level of thoughtfulness, though, is going to be the problem.
Yeah.
Well, and that's where the question is, like, is it even possible? I mean, you know, I don't know if it is, right? Like, to me, the sniff test here is, Did you guys see that Heineken advert that I tweeted about? Did you see this? No. All right. This is actually relevant to this. Anyone should go and look up Heineken. It's on my Twitter feed, but there's like Heineken. I forget exactly what the name of it is. I'll look it up and mention it in a second. But what they basically did is they brought, it's a really cool ad. They basically bring people with like, they interview a bunch of people about their political opinions. And there's some people saying trans people are terrible. And some people are saying trans rights matter and all this kind of stuff. They put them in a room. They don't know anything about each other. And then they get them to kind of work on a project together and they build a bar. And then what happens is they show them the video of them sharing their political opinions. And then they say, it's up to you now whether you sit down and have a beer and get over your differences. And everybody sat and had a conversation about it. And everybody ended up becoming friends. And actually, a friend of mine on Facebook told me that she knows somebody in that video who's still friends with the person they rabidly disagreed with. So to me, the test here, the sniff test for Facebook is enabling that. Two people who've got radically different opinions about something who can thoughtfully come and sit down and have a conversation. And it doesn't turn to name calling and bickering, which is so often the case on Facebook.
I think the shared experience of having built something in the physical world is not replicable virtually in any way, shape, or
That's
form.
That's for sure true.
If one thing has become apparent, and this is something we've all said that we didn't think was the case and we've turned out to be wrong about, it's that building communities online felt like, hey, we all come together to build a school or something, and it's just not like that. Yeah. And we sort of brushed away the whole, oh yeah, people have arguments because ASCII text is stripped of nuance and everything. But actually, that was the really key important point. So I want to talk about another Facebook whistleblower, Sophie Zhang. And she left Facebook 6 months ago, and BuzzFeed wrote a very long thing about, she wrote a complicated memo because she was one of the people involved with very much around a political division. And she was in the department that attempted to stop people using Facebook to undermine political campaigns or their political opponents or the political opposition or whatever. And the thing she said was that Facebook were doing way less work than they should, especially out in places outside the US, and how she was running very much unsupported. And the reason I mention her is that earlier this week, after Frances Haugen came up in the news, Zhang said, you know, I've been talking to government agencies and they're still pursuing the stuff that I was talking about. And what she said, now you may not buy everything she says, and it's worthwhile reading the things in detail. You probably read them 6 months ago, BuzzFeed, but it's worthwhile reading over this again, people listening to this. But she said she did not believe that the failures she observed during her 2.5 years at the company were the result of bad intent by Facebook's employees or leadership. It was a lack of resources and the company's tendency to focus on global activity that posed public relations risks as opposed to electoral or civic harm. And that, to me, rings very true. It's not that, much as it's quite convenient to believe that the governing board of Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg are sitting there going, ha ha, which Central African Republic should we overthrow today? That's actually not how it is, right? This is not smoky backroom conspiracies. Jeremy's doing the, I'm not sure about that.
So I don't think they actively want that, but you look at blundering into a foreign country where they clearly don't understand local, not only local laws and languages, but just societal norms and nuance, setting up shop, and then just the only thing they care about is scaling as quickly as possible and monetizing, and then realizing too late that they've created a massive opportunity for harm. Like, you think they would have learned it in Myanmar, and they keep learning it over and over and over and not caring. So the "and not caring" at some point means, like, are they actively planning it? No. Are they actively trying to stop it? Clearly not.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you, but, and this is said about 2/3 as a joke and 1/3 completely seriously, if someone heard what you said there out of context and didn't know who you were talking about, and I said he's talking about the US State Department, I think people would go, huh, yeah, blunder into a country, yeah. Yeah, don't learn from their previous mistakes.
That's no argument.
It's a pretty salient point.
So, the thing to me which rang true about that is that Facebook are under-resourcing that department, and partially because that department's under-resourced and partially because of management managerial directives, they go after stuff which looks bad for Facebook rather than is bad for the world. So is that something that they can choose? Well, if they were to decide to choose to fix this, they could choose to fix that.
But a couple of things that came out in the leak were internal research of theirs showed a thing, and it went directly all the way to Zuckerberg. Like, hey, this thing is actively causing harm. Should we stop? And the directive was no.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. Yes.
So, I mean, that's pretty clear cut to me.
Yeah. Okay. So completely apart from this, there are things where I think Zhang was wrong, and it is to do with actual terrible behavior by Facebook. But I mean, clearly, if we're going to ask the question, what could Facebook do to stop this happening? One of the things is that stop doing that. When they do a study and it says this is causing people harm, should we keep doing it? The answer should be yes. And if the answer isn't yes, stop doing that.
What fascinates me is they seem to have a phenomenal internal research department that is well resourced, and then they just ignore them.
They just don't pay any attention to what they come up with.
It's just fascinating that they have they do the research, do it well, and then are like, nah, okay, thanks for the research.
The big question in these kinds of situations that I always ask, and not just big companies, but individuals, is what was the role of intent, right? So did someone intend to have the outcome that they're being criticized of? Or were they just, was it negligence, right? Or was it, you know, they just didn't know what they were doing? And as you both know, I'm a bit of an optimist. I'd like to think that Facebook don't intentionally try to create negative situations like this. But I thoroughly believe, I think to Jeremy's point, that they keep making the same mistakes over and over again. And the machine isn't set up to learn from those mistakes. And the problem is it's one thing to kind of like fuck up and there's a bit of a PR bluster and then everybody gets back to normal. But when you are running the largest social network in the world, you fundamentally impact many, many lives. Like, you don't just get the luxury of, oh, I'm sorry, this, you know, you don't get the PR apology like most companies get, right? You know, in the same way that when PG&E over here in California, when the electricity goes out, they don't get the luxury of taking time to try and figure it out and then put a, you know, groveling apology out there, because hospitals aren't getting power and people aren't getting power and whatever else. So, you know, with a lot of people, I think we can afford them the benefit of the doubt. But with Facebook, it seems like in my mind, there's less of an evil intent there. Their values might not be aligned with other people, but it just sounds like they're just not running the company how they should be running it. And they should be learning from these kinds of mistakes.
I mean, what's the difference between repeatedly knowingly making the same decision and intent?
Well, if you're knowingly making a bad, doing something, that's such a good question. If you're knowingly doing something wrong, that's bad intent, right?
I concur.
Yes.
But I think there's a lot, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a lot of executives and middle managers at Facebook who, frankly, just don't give that much of a shit and they're just not doing their jobs properly. And at the end of the day, like with every business, the way you fix that is accountability, and that's got to come from the top. That's got to come from Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg's got to basically say, if our teams don't fix these problems, you're out. That's the only way to fix it. So, but I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. It's easy to shit on Facebook, but
yeah, yeah.
I suspect that it's more that they're just making these mistakes. I don't know. But again, I'm an optimist. So anyway, we need to think about wrapping up soon because Jeremy's got a plane ride in two and a half minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say. So briefly summarizing, and do please add to this list. But I think we went into this asking the question, what could be asked of Facebook and what could they choose to do themselves?
Yep.
To do this, what could be demanded of Facebook and what could they choose to do themselves on this? And we've actually got quite a few suggestions. Stop ignoring your internal research, which tells you that you're doing things wrong.
That would help.
Yes.
Permit third-party tools to augment or change your Facebook experience without banning them. Learn from your mistakes. Optimize for metrics other than engagement as your first, last, and only thing to optimize for. properly resource your internal improvement teams rather than giving them half as much resource as they need. And Zuckerberg needs to fire half of his team.
Zuckerberg also needs to not ride on any kind of craft with a giant fucking American flag ever again.
It's
so bizarre.
I mean, yeah.
So one thing I would be curious to discuss with the Bad Voltage community and head over to our Slack or forum to chat about this is the one thing here that's the most interesting to me from a technology perspective, because I think a lot of this is really not about technology, but one piece is very much about technology. And that is, if you're a company over a certain size, should there be a mandate, especially if you are a platform predicated on social networking? Is there some level of open data or open formats that should be mandated at a, I guess, government level? I don't know what government would be able to mandate it, perhaps the US, perhaps the EU. But is there some level of open graph or open data that should be mandated for companies this size? And if so, where would you draw the line and how would you draw it? I would be curious to see what the Bad Voltage community thinks about that.
Yeah. One final question for the Bad Voltage community. Wouldn't it be cool if there was like an open source style standard or project where the recipe of all those data points for what goes into what thoughtful communication means, wouldn't it be cool if there was a project for that? And what would you measure to influence what's thoughtful and what's not?
Don't tell people, hey, let's collect loads and loads of data about people in order that we can work out more about them. No, stop collecting the data.
I think you just recreated Flock from First Order Principles. Congratulations.
The ship of collecting data has already sailed, and it sailed about 20 years ago, okay? My point is, given the world that we live in right now, wouldn't it be cool if all of these companies were working together to determine how, given the data that they've got, how they can influence what actually is thoughtful and non-thoughtful conversation?
I agree.
Why should this only happen inside of Facebook?
So you want like a GPT-3 model for thoughtfulness?
I want a standard for what thoughtfulness is.
Of us broadly agree on many things, and I don't think we would define it the same. So defining it for Earth seems
I'm not saying it's not a big question.
Untractable.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's not. Also, when you figure that out, figure out how to how people can use their fucking turn signals, because that continues to annoy me.
So, Jono, yes, I agree that you think that would be cool.
I mean, would it not be cool if everybody basically had a formula?
No, it would not be cool if there was an ISO standard for thoughtfulness that I have to meet up with.
That would not
be cool.
You are not understanding what I'm trying to do here. I'm basically saying that on Facebook, if they were to figure out how to differentiate between a reasonable person having a reasonable disagreement with someone and a dickhead having a disagreement with someone, why not share how they figure that out with the world? Isn't that the whole point of open source and open standards?
Okay, yes. I will buy that.
That's what I'm saying.
Honestly, I don't think what you're describing is possible because of Goodhart's law. If you come up with a thing for this, then it will be gamed almost by definition.
But I think if you've got so many data points, it can't be gamed. That's the point. You can game it if it's one data point, the forum posts. If Facebook are measuring 1,000 different data points, and then through that 1,000 data points, there is a formula that determines thoughtfulness, you can't game it. It's impossible. There's no visibility on it. There's nothing to see to game. So,
well,
gaming it is not the problem.
I'm assuming Jeremy is like, he's taking tiny micro steps towards the airport as we speak.
No, all good.
He's also going to have the angriest flight. He's going to be like, we needed another 20 minutes of this conversation. I'm going to sit in an airplane.
So this conversation could have probably gone on for another 2 hours, to be honest.
Oh, yes, trying hard. Yes, absolutely. Yes. So I will be interested to hear what the Bad Voltage community think. So do let us know. And we should say to everyone who's watching Marius edit this on Twitch, we think Marius is great. Really, we do, now that you've been through all of this. Cheers, Marius. And thank you, Nerdzoo Media, for editing this.
Thank you, Marius. All right. Peace out, everyone. by the way, given that this has been edited on Twitch, we should all point out the fact that we hate Marius. He sucks.
I was going to say, also, Twitch now knows how terrible all of us are at counting in unison. So, great kick off to the show.
Man, this can't go well.
Welcome, everyone, on Twitch. Well,
was Marius on that list of Twitch ultra paid?
Yeah, there was Critical Role, and then it was Marius. You know what? No, it wasn't.
I'm never saying the word ultra paid Twitches ever again. Anyway,
who starts? Who wants the intro? I'll do it.
Yeah, you do it. Intro it and then introduce the topic. All right.